Okay, welcome to Radioactive Magazine. This is your host, Bill Claus, and on the line here I have Ito Utini. Are you there, Ito?
Yes. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Bill, for having me on the show today.
Oh, sure. I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction here. Ito was a 31-year-old immigrant from Morocco. She is a Fulbright scholar. She speaks, I'm not sure, 6, 7, or 8 languages. I'll let her tell you that. She is in the United States on asylum basis from Morocco, like I said. And I've always had this saying that God created wars to teach Americans geography. But I know that's not true of my listeners, but anyway, Morocco is in the northwest corner of the African continent. And just a little bit of history, just enough to kind of set the stage. Morocco is a 100% Islam state. It was, of course, it was kind of the pass-through point to get to the Iberian Peninsula back in the 6th and 7th centuries, and so it's been, it's long history with the Islam religion. And it's, Morocco is an authoritarian regime, according to the Democracy Index of 2014, Freedom of the Press 2014 gave it a rating of not free. I also do know that looking at some of the stuff that was on the webs, on the internet, that it's illegal, homosexual acts are illegal, premarital sex is illegal in Morocco, and it's also illegal to proselytize any religion other than Islam. That kind of sets the stage for the discussion I'm going to have with Ito. Ito, tell us your story, however you want to start it, and how old were you when you left Morocco, and how did you happen to leave Morocco, and why are you on asylum? I'm just going to let you talk and tell as much of yourself as you feel like talking about right now.
Yeah, thank you so much. So my name is Ito Utini, and I was born, as Bill said, and raised in Morocco, that is North Africa. I am a native Moroccan, and as mentioned before, Morocco is a Muslim country. I don't practice any religion. My mom died when I was little, and I was raised with my other, my dad's family for the first 12 or 13 years of my life. And after that, I moved to my mother's family. I was born a healthy child, and when I was at my mother's family, my uncle's wife threw a kitchen utensil and blinded me when I was 17. When I was a child, I always saw my cousins or my neighborhood friends going to school. I wanted to go to school, but it was my only dream. It was nobody's dream, nor no one saw it as a responsibility to take me to school. And I, of course, never gave up on that dream of one day that I will be able to educate myself and be able to achieve my dream. When I was 17, as I said before, I was blinded and I was left in the hospital, which I am thankful to my uncle's wife for blinding me, because she gave me another key to open another door to my life, and I was able to start school for the first time at the age of 17. I remember the first time when I went to the class, my teacher asked me to spell my name, and I didn't even know what does that mean. At the age of 17, I started from the 7th grade due to my age, and I was able to get my high school degree in 6 instead of 12 years. At the same time, my family left me, and I ended up being homeless in Morocco for 6 years. My homelessness led to different forms of abuse, including sexual and physical, as well as psychological abuse. I was forced to do things that I never was happy doing. I slept in the snow, I stayed hungry, but at the same time, my thirst and hunger was something that I took, and all my pain I took to read and write. I learned and I dragged books and I carried them in the plastic bags. I tried to shelter my books in the plastic bags because I could not shelter myself. I worked as hard as I could, and in my last year of high school, I was rescued by an American couple whom I consider now my family and my eyes. And for that, I am thankful to my family and my friends, Fezzi and Thomas, for being my rescuers, as well as to all my friends and everyone who has helped me during my journey. When I graduated from high school, I went to the university. When I was homeless, I saw journalism as a means to help solve the problems that those like me are facing, or were facing, or have been facing. But unfortunately, I tried contacting different media in Morocco, different platforms, but no one was interested in my story. When I was with my American family, they were taking care of me. They took me to the university where I majored in English studies. Well, in my last year at the university, I applied to the Fulbright Scholarship, and I was awarded the Fulbright Scholarship to come to the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas, where I majored in journalism. I got my master's degree. While I was studying, I was hoping that I could take my experience that I learned in America to change Morocco. Unfortunately, when I came out as non-Muslim, it was impossible for me to go back to Morocco. And thanks to my lawyer and her students, my friends, and my host family, I was able to seek asylum. And I am thankful to the U.S. government for speeding the progress. And I got my asylum last year. Now I am an asylee, and America is my home. I am very excited to give back to this country what the freedom that it has given me, and all the resources, the support that I have been receiving from my American fellows and everyone, even strangers on the streets. So, and now I am also here in Kansas City, very excited to volunteer for KKFI, and I am so excited to meet all the people here. Thanks to also my teachers and my instructors at Alpha Point, I am studying computer, how to use a computer with different softwares, and I am very thankful to my instructors here at Alpha Point.
So when you educated yourself at kind of a late age, weren't you already blind by then, and did you have the assistive equipment necessary to educate yourself, how were you able to overcome those obstacles?
Well, it was really hard. As I said before, even being homeless for 6 years, I didn't even have a shelter, let alone assistive technology. I only was able to use Braille at the school, in the blind school. When I was at the university, I had my classmates and just volunteers reading for me. I never was able to use technology. I remember when I landed in America in 2017, I was terrified when I got a phone, and I didn't even know how to save a contact. I have come so far, and I've learned a lot on how to use a computer. So at the time, just the phone was so scary for me. I never had any access to technology in Morocco. It exists there, but not for those like myself. People who have family and who are able to who afford it, have it, but I never did have any technology back in Morocco. I did it just in a traditional way.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. Of course, I know very little about the culture of Morocco, except, you know, maybe what I read on the internet. Now, a lot of, I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but a lot of Muslim countries, Islam countries, are particularly oppressive of women. Is that true of Morocco as well?
Yes. As a matter of fact, if you look up my name online, the first article that came, I was wearing a headscarf. I lived in the mountains, and when I left to the capital of Morocco, I removed the headscarf, though I didn't want to put my pictures on the internet, on Facebook or anywhere. But when a lot of people, my teachers, my high school teachers, when they found out, they were very unhappy. And when I came to America, then when I started putting a lot of my pictures on Facebook, and I received a lot of angry messages and emails and calls and videos and all of that. So yes, it's really hard, and it's harder for a disabled person, because a disabled person is seen as someone who has to be very religious, and someone like me who is not religious at all, not even little, being being against practicing those rules that are, or Islamic rules, makes it really hard. It's hard for women. It's hard for everyone to renounce Islam in most of Muslim countries.
Did you, while you were in Morocco, did you try to hide the fact that you did not accept the religion, or just kind of kept quiet about it, or how did you deal with that?
It is sadly enough, I didn't hide it, actually. I had to lie about it. There was, like, for example, Ramadan is a monthly practice, a month that the Muslims have to fast from down to the sun up. I used to do that, and when I was too tired of it, I had to fake a story to say that, you know, I'm not going to go out or something. And there is no way, like, for example, for Christian or atheist or anyone who is not practicing Islam to, like, drink water, for example, outside or eat something. There is no way. It's almost impossible to even, like, cook something at your home. So, yes. And the fact that I was sponsored by an American couple made it harder for me to be public. I was, as I said, later, after 2015, for, like, my last 2 years in Morocco, I was able to get around a little bit with no headscarf in the capital, but still I had to say that the faith is in my heart and all of that, even though scientifically speaking, my heart does nothing but pump blood. But I had to, whatever, follow the social norms and fake it until I made it. There was no way for me to come out. And as you said before, LGBTQ and all the minorities, it's really hard, just as atheism or Christianity or any other ideologies that are not Islamic ideologies related. And it's a kingdom country for sure. So it was hard to be myself.
So you mentioned LGBTQ. Is there a presence of LGBTQ in Morocco, and does it exist kind of underground, or are they open about their movement, or is that just too dangerous to be very open, openly gay?
I think it's there has to be an underground, because as humans, we're social animals, and we have to create our little bubbles or groups. For sure, there has to be. But no, there is no way for someone to be public about their sexual identity. But thanks to underground groups, there has to be something for people to socialize and communicate with the people who have the same identities like themselves.
Were you able to find people sympathetic to the fact that you were, I'm going to call you an atheist, I don't know if you consider yourself an atheist or not, but did you find some people sympathetic to you that you could confide in and you know, you could at least, converse with, or did you just avoid discussing religion altogether?
It's really, no, I didn't have any group. It's not hard, but it's impossible to even start a conversation on religion or anything that is not Islam. So, for example, one day I was talking on the phone, and the taxi driver was really angry, saying, like, even murdering someone is not as bad as renouncing Islam, as leaving Islam, as not you know, because it's apostasy and heresy. So, of course, it's very, it's seen from people's point of view as something like worse than anything else that it could exist in there. So, as I said, you could, and actually the person told me that he murdered his wife and or killed his wife. He used the word in Moroccan, which could mean the same thing because languages are different. So, and he went to jail and the king just got him out of jail, but he's thankful for that. And because he is, he submits himself to God and to Allah and Islam. So he is forgiven now and he's good. So the ticket, basically he got a ticket. But as for me, there is no way I could say that I didn't believe, but it was just a phone conversation that he heard while I was taking taxi from somewhere to somewhere else. So I didn't find the group. And as a matter of fact, when I got my asylum, I lost all my friends because most of them didn't believe it. Most of them were thinking just because I want to look more modern. That's why I don't put a headscarf. That's why I wear dresses. And by the way, that like wearing a dress in a Moroccan context is like naked, which is kind of weird. Because when I was told that my pictures on Facebook were I was naked, I thought it was real nakedness. And wearing a dress is something seen as being not covered. Therefore, it's a bed, and the angels are speeding on someone, and so it's very sensitive. So I lost all my friends after that. More, I would say, my Moroccan friends, just for that, just because I don't practice or I don't believe in the same thing that they believe. And yeah.
So how old were you when you came to the University of Arkansas on the Fulbright scholarship?
I was 29 and I am 31 now. I came to study my master's degree, and I've been studying for 14 years now, and I will celebrate my blindness anniversary next week, actually. So it's been 14 years of educating myself, and I am so happy that I have been able to accomplish all my dreams. And when I was homeless for 6 years, the reason I survived homelessness in the mountains, in the snow, you know, being hangry, being cold, being lonely, is that I was dreaming that one day I will become a journalist, that one day I will be able to study a master's degree and go for a PhD, that one day I will be able to travel the world and speak to thousands of people. And it was my dreams and my self-confidence that helped me, and of course my American friends and my hard work and some of my teachers. So
well, I will verify that you and I have talked a few times on the phone now, and you always sound up. You always talk like you have a smile on your face, and you have such a lyrical name anyway, Ito Utini, if I'm saying that correctly. But it's a name that makes me smile. So, tell us a little bit about your experience when you got to Arkansas. I'm sure that was quite a culture shock, as a woman of color, perhaps some of the same oppression you found in your old country you may have experienced here in our blessed Midwest as well, or our whatever you want to consider Arkansas. So what was your experience like in Arkansas?
I lived in Fayetteville, Arkansas for 3 years and a half, and it actually was really good. I've heard a lot that the best place in Arkansas is Fayetteville, and the university was very diverse, and the professors were really helpful, and the fact that I am a Fulbright scholar, it made things, I guess, easier. The only place that I, of course, received in a lot of things that I was shocked, that reminded me of Morocco quite a little bit, was Little Rock, Arkansas. I ended up wanting to go there and went there for a while, and it was a little bit hard, where actually even a blind fellow told me that he doesn't know how to communicate with me when he figured out that I am black. And I said, well, but we're blind, so let's not think about that. And I said, I'm not sure if I am black or brown or pink. I'm not sure about my color either, because I forgot. I've been blind for 14 years now. I mean, just making fun of things, but he was really serious about it. I am really interested in discrimination within a group. There is sometimes what I face in America, where I would say most of the times is actually from people like myself, whether immigrants, whether people of color like myself, which is really interesting. And I haven't yet to see anyone who talks about these things. I experienced some negative things, and most of the times I would say over 90% of what I've experienced in America is from people like myself, whether people who are children of immigrants or people who have immigrated here, or I'm not saying everyone. Of course, I don't believe that all people of one race, country, religious ideology, or color, or culture, or are bad or good. That would be really not something that someone like myself has to say. I think we have to judge people based on individuals. And even that, actually, in my culture, in the Berber Amazigh culture in Morocco, we say we can't know what's going on in someone's mind. Therefore, you have to just trust people and go with their flow. Sometimes someone may be nice to me today, and they may be not nice to me tomorrow. We don't know what's going in people's minds, whether they're having some issues that they're facing, whether they're having personal or psychological, or, you know, that they might are experiencing something that we don't know. So I don't see, as long as I am free in my thoughts, I am free in my place. As Martin Heidegger says, my freedom stops when other person's freedom starts. So as long as I am not told how to dress, what to eat and what not to eat, and whether listening to music is good or bad, or, you know, speaking another language or marrying whoever or dating whoever I want, as long as I don't have those things, which I am grateful to the U.S., I've experienced that freedom, and I have experienced, as I said before, a lot of support. Being a blind woman, the first time I took a bus from the Rabat, the capital of Morocco, to Casablanca, to the airport. And I was terrified. I was thinking, well, now when I go to the U.S., I don't know anyone. And when I read about Arkansas, I didn't know Arkansas. It wasn't something that we would read about in the news. We just knew New York, Florida, blah, blah. And I was like, is Arkansas somewhere in the United States, or is it somewhere in Asia? Because I'm not good in geography either. So when I landed, I found my American host family waiting for me at the airport, and I literally the first day I went to have dinner with them, and my Fulbright advisor, and I am grateful to the U.S., the State Department that sponsors the Fulbright program, they sent him, and everyone was there for me, and I didn't feel alone at all. I actually made friends in the first day as soon as I landed in Arkansas. It's a little bit small place and all of that, and I like big places. That's why I'm really enjoying Kansas City. But it was, as I said, a wonderful experience with the university as well as the people in Fayetteville in general. So, yeah.
Where are your sponsored parents live?
They're now in Texas. They just moved back from Morocco 2 years ago.
So what brought you to Kansas City, and talk a little bit about Alpha Point, if you would.
So when I came to the States, I heard a lot of programs that help blind people. And as I said before, in Morocco, I never was able to learn how to use a computer, like, you know, using softwares like Microsoft products or Google products, or JALS, which is a job access for speech or voiceover. I didn't know any of that. And when I was at the university, my American host family, they helped me a lot by looking up things and learning basically how to do the basics and how to navigate my grad school. But when I got my asylum, I found myself needing a job. And I would apply for a job, and because of the Fulbright and my experience and my ability to speak many languages, I would get an interview, and I would be asked, like, do you know how to use JALS? And I'm like, no, I've never had JALS. So, and I am also, I would like to thank Alpha Point as well as my state counselor for this support. When last year, when I got asylum, I got a state counselor who has been helping me, and he basically gave me a lot of options to choose which state or city that I want to go to. There's a lot of programs for blind people who help to help blind people prepare them for jobs and with everything, basically including daily living and technology and everything, mobility. So I came here to Alpha Point 3 weeks ago, and I am learning how to do all of that. For example, I have been using a white cane on my own. Like, I've traveled to Asia, and I've traveled to different states here, but I've been using my own techniques. I call them Edo blind techniques that are kind of just useful for me, or I guess I would say I've survived using those, but I have never learned the standard techniques on how to use my cane to find places and all of that. So now I am doing that through mobility training here at Alpha Point in Kansas City, and I am learning how to use advanced programs to edit audio, because I am interested in radio journalism, and I am using learning also how to use JAWS, doing different things, navigating any or each whatever program is there on the computer, or navigating the online sites and accessibility, and learning how to know what is accessible and what is not. This is basically what Alpha Point does to all blind and visually impaired individuals like myself.
I could talk to you for an hour. That, so just a real brief summary here. We're talking to Ito Tini, who is a woman of color. She spent several years as homeless. She is she was a non-believer in a very religious country, and she's blind, and she's just making the best life she can for herself, aspiring to be a PhD, working on her master's. And I gotta go, but we'll welcome to Kansas City, and welcome to KKFI.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
Absolutely.